GHRT Rewinds are brought to you by Laughlin and Wolfington Realty. Mike and Nate and Harrison teaming up to help you sell your home faster and for top dollar. This is the George Hill Rick Tyler Show. Here come the spin doctors. Gee, who is the Democratic operative who's busy in the morning with the fam, but he affords us time on the PDQ door telephone line?
Well, that would be John Wadsworth. Good morning, John.
Morning, fellas.
Brent Littlefield has ties to Win Maine. He's the Republican side of the radio right now. Hey, welcome back, Brent. How are you? Apparently, it's not as easy to be Brent Littlefield this early in the morning. We'll try to reconnect with him in a moment or two on the PDQ door telephone line. But, John, why don't we start with you? This was supposed
Sorry
to...
Sorry about that, guys.
Oh, there you are. Hi, Brent.
I was muted. My daughter was listening, and I said, win with win. It didn't go through. Win with win.
It was difficult for us to decide or find out who won in Iowa last night. Brent Littlefield,
exactly.
We're going to start with you, Brent Littlefield, this time. What happened in Iowa? Why don't we know who won?
I mean, it's just crazy, and what's more exciting is watching the news media that has all these reporters and plane flights to get them to New Hampshire, and they're just losing their mind because they and their producers and everybody have nothing to talk about. So they're literally going crazy right now. And I think unfairly attacking Pete Buttigieg, who claimed victory, and certainly a lot of the numbers look like he might have actually pulled it off or come really close, but they're attacking him. But it's just hysterical. And this is what happens when you have people mucking around and changing things. I mean, Iowa's been going on for years. It's never been perfect. Nothing that involves volunteers and humans ever is perfect, but it's been going on for years. They try to change things. They try to change the system. And what happens? But an utter disaster. It sort of reminds me of the disaster of ranked choice voting. You go in there and you muck with a system that always works and claim you're going to get an easier, better result, and look what happens.
And John Wadsworth, over to you. We thought this would be an easy start to our segment, getting your reaction to who won in Iowa, but we don't know.
Yeah, well, it's a train wreck if you won, and it's a lifeline if you lost. Hopefully, this will lead to putting the Iowa caucuses to bed, because this quaint notion of caucuses where you have to go and spend several hours publicly debating who you're going to support is just outdated and no longer viable, and certainly not for a first state that is going to winnow the field, rightly or wrongly. I think 6 months from now, no one's going to care. The problem is, in a primary, once the starting gun begins, you don't have 6 months, you have days. And basically, I think what you're going to see is a reset. Everybody goes to New Hampshire, and New Hampshire will basically have to claim that they were the first. Because by the time these results come out, it'll be an afterthought. Then we'll be in the State of the Union, and then the world will move on.
Yeah, I was laughing a little bit here with Brent's comment, because I was sitting there last night. I tuned it in, and I had the same feeling. We've got reporters who are about ready to go nuts. They've been promoting this for months, literally, and now they can't say anything. The candidates were stunned. The aides were PO'd, to say the least. The Democrats needed, really, I'll go to John with this. The Democrats needed to come out of there with some kind of message, some kind of front runner, and it isn't going to happen, right?
No. This basically turned opening day into a preseason game. That, for all of its importance, that's what it is. Maybe this is in the long run, I'm hoping this will be a good thing to make us realize we cannot allow the first state to define everything. If the Patriots lose their first game of the year, you're not going to freak out. I've never liked the fact that Iowa and New Hampshire seem to have carried this huge amount of impact on the race when, a good long primary really helps the country get to know a candidate and you get to see what they're truly made of. I think that this may actually end up putting a stamp, a last nail in the coffin on these things, because it's a mess. And it just needs to go away.
Brent, they bought some kind of app. I don't know who sold them the app, but it crashed and there was other problems. But all I can see right now, New Hampshire, the money coming in over the transom, I always laugh about that. They've only got one television station in New Hampshire, and they'll have to back up the Brinks truck now to collect all the money that's going to start flowing into New Hampshire, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, New Hampshire and Iowa both, I mean, they make a fortune off these things. And, I've done a lot of work in New Hampshire. I've done work in Iowa as well, as has John. And on the Democrat side, it doesn't matter what side you're on, politically as it relates to kind of how it functions. I mean, these are people that politics is a whole different world. It's a way of life. They expect the politicians to come up and shake their hand, eat their chocolate chip cookies, kiss their firstborn baby, hand them their first paycheck, and then come see them again the next day before they get their vote. I mean, it's literally insane the level of detail they want from these candidates. People say it vets them well. I don't know. I don't know that it actually, to give John kudos for that, I don't know that it works all that well. And then you're right, you know, these stations and these small media outlets make an ungodly fortune off from it. So I can tell you right now that the people in Iowa are literally in both political parties going to be freaking out, thinking that they're going to lose all that money that gets spent there every year. I mean, you look at Maine with the competitive races we've had in Maine, and I've heard a lot of stories from the TV stations just in Maine and how much money they're making off these competitive political races. And in Iowa and New Hampshire, it's a whole different world. So, you know, we are focused on New Hampshire now, and I think that there, you know, in the next year or two, there's going to be a tremendous amount of stress going through Iowa with this debacle. And Republicans are going to say, look, it's not our fault. We didn't do it. We everything functions well for us. But people are going to be sure upset with that leadership of the Democratic Party.
John, I want to pivot back to you. Following the undisputed accusations that the Democratic National Committee took the nomination away from Bernie Sanders and gave it to Hillary Clinton last time, you can understand why the Sanders campaign wasn't going to wait for Iowa to get its act together, but early this morning released this news release. Due to the failure of the Iowa Democratic Party to release results tonight, and in the interest of full transparency, Bernie 2020 senior advisor Jeff Weaver released the campaign's internal reporting numbers. They claim these are from reputable people working for the Sanders campaign, and they got the results from 40% of the precincts in Iowa. Sanders with 29.66%. And next was, I believe, it was Buttigieg with 24.59. Can you blame the Sanders campaign for releasing the numbers that it had based on the history?
Well, first of all, they were not undisputed accusations. They were quite heavily disputed. Look, I don't blame at all. When you work a caucus, if you are an organized campaign, you have people at every caucus site, you have precinct captains that can call in their numbers. If I am any one of these campaigns and I have positive numbers, I am putting them out there as fast as they can. It's probably not going to help because, again, unless you get that official, you know, thumbs up victory from the party, it's really not going to matter. Honestly, this was tens, if not hundreds of million dollars of money spent, and it's a wash. We're going to start off. The true winner is New Hampshire because they will get going on they will be credited with being the first state to run.
Brent, I'm going to toss over to you, and I'm going to use the word undisputed again, because when the allegations were made public in the emails in the breach, no one stood up to say that, no, that's not true. Maybe I missed the news account, but Brent, to you, can you blame the Sanders campaign for releasing their own internal numbers following Iowa's Democratic Party and the failure to release results?
No, you're going to realize that you've got donors, activists, supporters, all those volunteers, all these people. I mean, they're going to be upset thinking that something's going on. They're going to want the campaign leadership to tell them something. But one thing I'll say is if you look across the board, you look at those numbers from Bernie Sanders, who apparently he released information from that he claims they have from 40% of the precincts. Buttigieg claims they have information from 70% of the precincts claims. And if you look at the other data, and then you look at the news reports, which I followed, from various reporters. Now, of course, reporters are not going to be in the hinterlands. They always seem to be closer to the cities where they can get a good hotel and a beer after the report. But if you look at them, they seem to consistently show that Buttigieg was doing well and that people in the subsequent rounds, if you're not viable, which again, kind of silly kind of process, sort of like ranked choice voting. You don't viable, these people move to another candidate. They move. It looks like Buttigieg did do well picking up people's second and third, it was basically second place votes. So I think it's very conceivable that Buttigieg did win. If we come out and we find out later today that he did, who knows, maybe he didn't. Let's say he did, then he really does screw him up because it gives him a chance to be that dark horse candidate that suddenly shot to the top, a little bit like Barack Obama in 2008, and it could really propel him. And the question is, did this debacle screw him out of an opportunity, screw up his opportunity, rather, to make sure that he can go into New Hampshire in a strong position? We just don't know.
Okay, gentlemen, there's so much going on to for us to cover. Let's go to 9 o'clock tonight. The president will deliver third State of the Union address less than a day before the U.S. Senate has to come back and vote on two articles of impeachment against him. Word is that the address will be themed about the great American comeback and would put forth a vision of relentless optimism. So I'll ask the question, and in the Super Bowl hasn't quite left me yet. What's the over and under, John, on the president sticking to the teleprompter script tonight? What's your, and doesn't get into the impeachment? The over and under. I'm going to go over, but go ahead.
We have heard that advisors, allies, anybody who's gotten his ear in the last week have begged and pleaded with him to stick to the script for this thing. But I got to say, I would be shocked if he stayed completely on script and didn't mention impeachment. That's the kind of White House we're dealing with. And I'm sure we're going to see, well, this could be a very celebratory, unifying speech. I'm sure it'll be, once again, divisive. And just the fact that we have to talk about it tells you the state that we're in. When you would expect this to be sort of a, we know the speech, and it's going to bring up several points of the agenda and a happy unification moment. Instead, you know, people are going to be glued to TV waiting for a moment when someone starts hurling out insults.
Well, the Trump speech, Brent Littlefield, tonight, you know, he got the pomp and the ceremony, which we always go through. He'll talk about China, talk about opportunity zones, maybe family issues, cost of health care, immigration. But what's your bet on the president leaving the script and going to impeachment?
Well, he, in big speeches like this that are more formal, he usually sticks pretty closely to the script. He might make a few like hand gestures. He might make a few eye signals, body signals, which you know, for Trump tell a lot, and it's a definitely another way of communicating. I can't imagine the look on his face or how he's going to react when he walks in there and he's supposed to hand a copy of the speech to the Vice President and Speaker of the House who are sitting behind him. I can't imagine what's going to look like with him talking with Nancy Pelosi over his shoulder. I mean, it's going to be beyond bizarre with the way that she's reacted with this in Russia collusion hoax stuff and the impeachment. So, I mean, I just don't I don't know what's going to happen as it relates to that, but he does tend to stick to the script in these formal speeches. And you know, we'll see if he makes a little aside to mention either impeachment or if he mentions, you know, the Iowa debacle. I think he's even more likely to mention the Iowa debacle than even impeachment, but we'll wait and see.
We only got a few moments left. Brent, I'm going to start with you on this one. John gets the last word. Brent, quick reaction to the Senate voting for no witnesses.
I mean, I don't think it's surprising because you already had the investigation side of this was supposed to take place in the House. This isn't like a normal trial in any way. And in the way that it works in the Constitution, that's where the House was supposed to deal with that there, bring their case, and they, people didn't feel like they met their threshold.
And over to you, John, your thoughts on the Senate making that critical vote to bring no new witnesses forward.
This is going to come back and bite the GOP in the butt. 70% of Americans wanted to hear witnesses. It's all going to come out. Bolton's book will be released in March, so we're going to hear it anyway. And I think it's going to look very bad for those senators that are in tight race.
GHRT Rewinds, brought to you by your hometown real estate team, Laughlin and Wolfington Realty. Thinking about selling your home? Call 629-9211 and start packing.